and welcome to the Sports Pro podcast. My name's Josh Sim, and I'm a reporter at Sports Pro. I'm really excited today to be introducing a very special guest on the podcast, Michelle Wee West, a US women's golfer who has achieved phenomenal success on the LPGA Tour, as well as 5 tour wins. She's also a past winner of the US Women's Open. Having recently retired, she is now fully focused on her post-playing career, which includes expanding her wide-ranging investment portfolio in areas such as technology, wellness, and healthcare. But that's enough from me. Why don't we introduce to the Sports Pro podcast, Michelle Wee West.
Michelle, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Obviously, you've recently retired, and I know it's only been a couple of months, but when you do look back at your career and sort of the impact you had on women's golf, what sort of things jump out to you?
Yeah, it's still pretty fresh. I don't really do a whole lot of reflecting back, but at the end of the day, I made some very bold choices in my career, deciding to play with the men, deciding to turn pro really early, deciding to go to college at the same time. I just hope that I've inspired other women, other girls to, do the same, make bold choices, even if it doesn't fit into quite what society wants us to do, to not be afraid to make those bold choices. And that's what I hope my legacy is.
Golf is, I guess, one of those sports where as long as you're injury free, I guess you can keep going for as long as you can. Was there a particular reason why now felt like the right time to sort of step away from the golf course, at least in that playing capacity, and I guess look into what was next for you?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for quite some time. I've been struggling with injuries. It just got to a point where my wrist just really couldn't keep up. I had a neck injury, and it was just like all the above kind of came boiling down together. Ended up seeing some wrist surgeons, and they recommended me not play anymore. And with Cultivated, with the combination of having my daughter, so that all happened before I had her, and then I was fully planning on retiring afterwards. But then after I found out, I had a girl, I just really wanted to go out there and show her, instead of just telling her that I was a golf pro, but like going out there and playing and for her to see it. So I made a decision to play as long as I could, came back, and it was hard. Obviously going back on the road with a young child, battling injuries, it just got to a point where, I made a very personal decision. A family decision was one that we made together. And, I just don't want to miss out. I don't want my husband to miss out. And I didn't want to deteriorate my body any further to say that I couldn't play with her further on. I want to be able to play golf with her. I want to be able to run around with her. And it was a difficult decision to make, but, I'm very happy with it. Now I host an LPGA tournament called the Mizuho Americas Open at Liberty National in New York. And my daughter got to be there the entire week, see the other women play. Obviously, she got to see me play when she was very little, but seeing me compete at Pebble Beach has been really cool. I think she really gets it. Just being able to do that, I'm really glad I held on for as long as I did. But I'm also super excited for the next part of my career.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess it's too early to tell, but has she started taking an interest in golf?
Before, she wasn't interested at all. And then I took her to the Mizuho Americas Open and then obviously the US Open where she saw me play. And then after that, she just really caught the bug. So we'll see if it sticks. We'll see if it doesn't. But as of right now, she gets excited about it.
You mentioned you sort of host a tournament. So of course, you're definitely sort of keeping in touch and watching the game at the moment. It's kind of a big question, but how do you sort of feel about the health of the LPGA at the moment and women's golf at this moment in time, I guess, compared to when you started out playing on the tour all those years ago?
Yeah, I'm very pleased with how we're progressing forward. I think there's still a very, very long road to go. But, every day it's an uphill battle, it's not easy. It's easier said than done to move forward in the women's sports space. There's been a lot of support lately, a lot of new viewership, which has been super exciting, but it's still a very uphill battle to climb. And I'm proud of our tour, proud of other female sports organizations for, utilizing this time, utilizing support and to launch forward.
Yeah. And I heard you speak about sort of the importance of broadcasters putting in on women's golf on prime time. And, I noted that, this year, US women's golf was put in prime time by NBC on the East Coast for the first time. And it's a difficult one because obviously, as you sort of know, it's a data-driven sort of thing now. I wonder, is there anything, I guess, you feel that the steps that can be taken for women's golf to get that exposure and to sort of, because it has sort of been shown that, you know, when it is on TV, people do come out and watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I think number one, giving the women the opportunity to be on, you know, national TV is huge. I think when you do so, the entertainment value has to also go up as well. By that, I mean the number of cameras that are out there. On any given week at a PGA Tour event, I think there were over 100 cameras at the tournament, filming every single angle, filming every single player. On any given week on an LPGA event, we have probably 10 or so. You know, that creates a lesser entertainment value because, you know, you're not cutting away fast enough to other players. People have shorter attention spans. You know, it would be amazing to have someone like the A team at CBS call our shots, like someone like Jim Nantz, Amanda Baleonis Renner, you know, just those top people. And with that, you know, it comes more viewership. You know, every week in and out, you have the top team at CBS. You have, you know, hundreds of cameras following the players every week. You have the newest cutting edge technology to give these announcers the right amount of data. You know, that is the uphill battle that I'm speaking of. This is like the stuff that we need to get in order to have better TV coverage because, you know, we're from national on TV. There's a lot of people that want women's sports to fail and they go and, you know, you see any lesser, you know, viewership numbers and they're like, oh yeah, this is why. It's an uphill battle for sure.
Yeah. And I also wonder how so many of the top ranking players in the moment seem to come from not even just Europe and North America, but Asia as well now. And we're talking sort of while the Solheim Cup's underway. I wonder whether you feel that, not to, you know, say the format needs to be revamped completely, but maybe there needs to be a way to sort of bring in these other regions where golf is seemingly having a bit of a renaissance. I don't know if you agree if that change sort of needs to come in or anything like that.
No, I mean, I love the Solheim Cup. I think it's an event that gathers a lot of attention, our biggest event of the year. We also have the International Crown where the top 8 countries come and compete against each other in a team format. What I would really love to see is for the President's Cup to become a mixed team event. You know, USA versus the world, obviously our international talent is super strong on our team. I think it'd be really fun to watch.
For sure. And so shifting gears to what you've done since your playing career, I mean, I know you've talked about there weren't many female athletes who were thinking like investors a few years back. Was there anyone that you did look up to in terms of inspirations? I know you've talked about Serena Williams, but are there any other ones as well that some inspired you?
Yeah, both the Williams sisters. You know, it's really cool seeing Serena Williams kind of really start a fund, probably one of the first female athletes to start their own fund and to really invest in things that she believes in. You know, Venus is a big inspiration of mine as well. You know, obviously, you know her as a tennis player, but her passion also lies in fashion, also lies in interior design and, you know, healthy eating. And she's really carved out a business for these endeavors and refuses to be, you know, pigeonholed as a tennis player. She wants to branch out. That's always something that I've, you know, admired and wanted to do. So they're huge inspirations of mine. You know, Alex Morgan as well, and a lot of athletes these days are just really being brave, making bold choices. And, you know, I take inspiration from all of them.
We're seeing a lot of athletes sort of go down that investment route, especially it feels like over the last few years across so many different sports. Is there something you can pin on why that seems to be the case? Why that trend is, you mentioned so Serena Williams, we're seeing obviously the likes of, you know, Kevin Durant, Alex Morgan, you mentioned as well. Is there a reason you can sort of put as to why this trend seems to be becoming more popular?
For me personally, it feels like it's about taking ownership of, you know, where you want to spend your time. I've been very fortunate to have many sponsors and many great sponsors that, you know, I've had very long relationships with. And it's been fun in the second stage to really focus on investing in companies that I believe in, that I want to be a part in, that I want to give my time to. You know, each company that you're partnered with is an investment of its own because it includes your time. So there has to be the right method to look at that. But also when it comes to investing, it's fun. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, have my own thing. I went to Stanford in the mid-2000s when the Facebook boom, Twitter, Silicon Valley was really going up. I went to school with the founder of Snapchat. So it was just that really that environment that cultivated there. And for me personally, you know, when I was playing golf full time, it's hard to really spend a lot of time and effort elsewhere because, you know, sports does take up 90% of your life. So it's been really fun in this like next stage to be able to spend the time on the projects that I'm, you know, passionate about.
You mentioned your time at Stanford, and I saw that you sort of were classmates with, like you said, Evan Spiegel, the founder of Snap. I'm curious, you know, I know obviously you were playing a lot of golf as a student athlete at the time, but were there any sort of little things that I guess you now look back and thought, oh, I've sort of soaked that up? Any little sort of lessons that have now helped guide this sort of investment career of yours from Stanford?
Yeah, you know, it's been a long time. I wish I took CS1, computer science, and learned how to code. That would have been really great in hindsight. I wish I took more, you know, investment-specific classes. I was a comm major, so a lot of my stuff was in journalism and communication research, which I really enjoyed. But like, I wish, you know, hindsight 2020, I wish, you know, I took more of those entrepreneurial classes that would have helped me now. But, you know, it's more sort of the spirit of everyone, right? It was, you know, the mid-early 2000s, Palo Alto, everyone was just hungry. Everyone's like going out there and getting after it. And it was just like really, really cool energy that was around campus, that was outside of campus, that was just all happening. And I feel like it's kind of happening again, you know, in the last couple of years. But yeah, it was a really special time. And I learned a lot, you know, outside the classroom and just being inspired by everyone in general.
It does feel like there's a little sort of bit of a tech revolution going on. I know you've invested in Sportsbox AI, who are sort of doing, again, pioneering technology that probably 10 years ago you wouldn't have imagined. What was it about their sort of pitch to you or that spoke to you and made you think, I really want to be a part of this as an investor and as a, you know, an equity owner?
Yeah, you talked about a good point that this technology would not have happened 10 years ago. Without this technology, 3D data was really only catered towards the elite. Only the top teachers would be able to afford the 3D data because it's many, many thousands of dollars to have the equipment. And then to get a lesson from a top teacher, you have to pay a lot of money to go. So your, you know, 3D data was really geared towards top athletes, the top tier echelon of clients that could afford it. But, you know, with this data, and this is why something I get very passionate about Sportsbox AI is that it democratizes 3D data. Because now you can use your phone to capture the 3D data. Anyone can use it. Any coach that has a phone that can download it on the app and they can teach it to their students. And you no longer have to pay many thousands of dollars to own 3D equipment to have this data.
You know, listening to you, you sort of talk about what Sportsbox AI is doing. I imagine if I asked sort of another athlete potentially about sort of investing in AI and 3D technology, it would be quite daunting to them because it's such a different field to, you know, the sports field, for lack of a better word. Was that a concern, I guess, when you were sort of beginning your investment career in terms of investing in fields that you necessarily didn't know a ton about? Or was there sort of a sense of adventure that there was something new out there to learn about and sort of take ownership in, I guess?
Yeah, and I think 3D data in general is super complicated. It's above my pay grade, as one might say. You know, that's why I invested in the team. It's the top 3D data people that are heading the company. So they know it a lot better than I do. I have faith in that they know it a lot better than I do. And, you know, I believe in the data. And also the fact that they're making 3D data so much easier to use, user-friendly, not just for coaches, but they have a user version of the app. And I'm all for, you know, using technology to dumb down really difficult information to process. And yeah, I mean, it is scary. It is a field that I don't know at all, but you have to expand your horizon or else you're just going to get stuck.
Speaking of technology, you are going to be a team owner in the TGL LA franchise. And that promises to infuse tech with golf and in this sort of innovative, shorter format that sort of Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods are behind. I guess, what was the appeal behind sort of getting involved in the TGL?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be, you know, part of the ownership team for the LA Golf Club, the LA team for TGL. You know, it is going to be very tech infused, you know, with it being screen golf, you're not going to be outside. And again, we're hoping to democratize the sport. We're not trying to change the sport by any means. You know, golf is such a beautiful sport, but, you know, sometimes people don't have access to you know, 5 hours of play. Some people don't have access to a green golf course. So we're hoping that with technology, we can bring the sport to so many more people and get them into golf. If they want to graduate and play on a big golf course, that's great. If they want to just play green golf for the rest of their life, that's also great as well. We just want to create like a new space for the new age golfer, someone that maybe lives in the city, someone that, you know, a new parent that only has an hour, or someone that wants to play socially at a bar. You know, these are things that we just want to introduce the game to. I think the game is so beautiful. I think the game is so useful in the business world. So I am very passionate about getting more women of color to play golf. So I think from my experience, golf has opened so many doors in the business world. So many executives and CEOs and, you know, people play golf that if you know how to play golf, you're kind of in this club. So yeah, I get very passionate about getting more women of color to get into golf.
Yeah. And also just what on paper sounds like a really fun way to sort of take golf into a different direction. And also must be pretty fun to know that you'll be sort of co-team owners with the Williams sisters that you mentioned. Giannis Antetokounmpo, NBA superstar. Was their presence, did that shape any sort of feelings about investing in the TGL, given that, you know, you mentioned the Williams sisters as being sort of people you looked up to when sort of forging your investment career?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the reason why I got excited about, you know, the Williams sisters and Alexis Ohanian about investing is that I know that they're super passionate about growing the women's sports and the women's side of things. You know, we really want to incorporate the women in this format. And like you said, it's a completely new format with technology. And, you know, I think it really paves a way to do something completely different, you know, have those mixed team events, get the women involved. And, you know, I just know their passion for that. They have 2 daughters now, and I know that they're passionate about growing other female athletes. So, you know, when you have a great founder like that, and Giannis is also a great example as well with his brothers, you know, he's really passionate about bringing sports to more people. So when you're around people that all have like the same mission and are aligned, it's a really fun time.
For sure. And it's also bringing together the common theme is that you all have a mindset that is sort of heavily focused on doing what it takes to win. And I wonder, as you sort of gone off the golf course to sort of becoming an investor, how does that athlete mindset translate into the investment world where, you know, you want to, I guess, win and get sort of really great investment deals done, but obviously it's a completely different sort of landscape as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing that I take away from, you know, being an athlete into the investment world is the discipline, you know, to stay your course, but also to take risks and to not be afraid of fail. You know, obviously winning is everything. All you want to do is win, but you also have to completely give away the fear of losing to win. Because once you're afraid of losing, you'll never win ever again. So that's like another part of investing. Of course, you want to win. Winning is everything. But at the same time, you can't be afraid, you know, to lose and to take chances on people.
Speaking of another investment deal that also sounds just as fun as TGL is Casa Azul. I won't know what it's like to invest in a tequila brand as of yet, but I was sort of listening to the story of how that came about in terms of, you know, it was sort of a mutual connection to yours or a friend of yours sort of reached out. So that seemed like a really organic sort of opportunity to have come up. And I guess you were sort of all on board.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like you said, investing in a tequila company is a lot of fun. Let me tell you, the tasting process is probably the most fun out of any other companies that I've been a part of. But yeah, you know, obviously the founder, Lance is a friend of ours, and you know, he started Body Armor and has a really great track record when it comes to beverage space. And a couple of years ago, he was saying, "I'm going to come out with a tequila company." I was like, "Let me know when you do, because I believe in you." I invested without even tasting tequila. I was like, "I believe in you, Lance. Like, I will invest in you." And it's been a really fun process so far. The product has been amazing, really well received as well. And it's just like great to also, again, be part of a company that just knows what the mission is. You know, they're all about organic tequila, farm to bottle, really single source, and, you know, be smart about it, be sustainable, you know, all the things that I am passionate about, but also not to forget to have the fun element. You know, tequila is supposed to be fun. It tastes great. And yeah.
No, it definitely is. And there's obviously a fair number of celebrities and athletes investing in alcohol brands as well. And I wonder whether that so comes into it, the fun side of it. But yeah, I mean, I imagine, you know, speaking of sort of brands like those are obviously brands that obviously attach themselves to athletes or sponsors as well. And I'm curious, you know, since choosing that mindset of becoming an investor, what kind of approach do you take to that? What compared to, you know, when you looked at doing sponsorship deals while you were playing? Because obviously it's a different sort of thing to ask from a company, I guess, and your responsibilities are a lot different as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to sponsorship and investing, I think the most important thing is to make sure that your missions are aligned and that the team is solid. And, you know, you guys kind of operate in the same way. When it comes to investing, there's a whole other added layer of making sure the financials are right, the numbers make sense, and, you know, what the potential upside is. So yeah, I mean, it's a similar process, but also very different at the same time. And I kind of approach the two very similarly.
For sure. And we're seeing, you know, one, increased sponsorship deals for female athletes, which is obviously amazing. I've heard you speak about sort of the need for female athletes to think like investors as well and sort of take that next step. Why hasn't that been a popular, widespread thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think before, and I still see it happening now, is that, you know, when a sponsor approaches an athlete and, you know, an agent brings it to them, a lot of times, you know, they're like, oh, this is as good as it's going to get. So just accept it, right? You probably won't get another sponsor. This is probably the only one that's interested in you. Female sports isn't that big. So like, you should be lucky that you should be getting sponsors. Like, it was kind of like that kind of mindset that was going on. And I think as a female athlete, you like subconsciously are like, oh yeah, like, I don't know when another sponsor is going to come. I should be lucky that they even want to sponsor me or pay me at all. So you kind of got into this like acceptance trend where you're like, okay, I should just accept it because I don't know when the next one's going to come. But I think that female athletes thinking like investors, it's a completely different mindset where you're, you know, there, you have the deal flow and the company approaches you, but if it isn't right for you, if you don't want to put your money in it, then I don't think that's the right company to align with. And I think it helps me personally to be like, okay, even when I am approached by a sponsorship, would I invest in this company? Is it something that I want to take ownership in? Because that's how I treat, you know, sponsors and the companies I invest in. I'm a part of the team. I'm part of the family. Like, do I want to be part of the family? And yeah, I think that's how you take ownership. I think you have to start taking ownership in your career and your where your money's at and, you know, your life.
Yeah. And I think taking ownership of your career and your life, as you sort of said there, you mentioned sort of people being willing to just be sponsored athletes. I guess you're sort of willing to be a face, but not the voice, I guess, in terms of shaping how, you know, you can contribute to the brand. And I imagine that's the mindset you've taken now. When you're in the room with a company about a potential investment, what are sort of the things you're telling them in terms of the value that you bring to the table?
Well, I think it's always a case by case. I think sometimes, you know, it's the right fit to be a silent investor just to cheer from the stands. Other companies, they, you know, want to be on advisory board or to help them, you know, help them market it, help them, you know, with the actual product design. So it's just really case by case. It's just whether, you know, what I want to do, what I have time for, but also what is needed, what is most needed for the company.
For sure. So I guess just talking about sort of being able to take ownership and provide value to a company, are there any examples of what things that you do to help that company grow and add value?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sportsbox AI is a great one. You know, I come on and help them with their actual product, with their 3D data, what people want to see. They have a user-friendly version. So trying to figure out what is user-friendly, like really going nitty-gritty on the technology side, also helping them, you know, market it and I guess post about it, talk about it. You know, with Tonal, with my investment, we came out with a golf series for the actual workout. It just depends, you know, it depends on what it is. You know, with Super Goop, I've had them at my tournament, Casa Azul as well, with Happy Viking, you know, just helping them, you know, taste the product. It varies a lot.
I wonder, you mentioned the Tonal one, and that to me is obviously centered in golf in terms of apparel and equipment. And we've seen some of this with other sports that where companies haven't been able to put together equipment and apparel that's bespoke to women and female athletes. And I wonder, is that sort of a role you're able to play at Tonal in terms of being able to sort of help them widen the accessibility of their products to a female audience?
I mean, I think Tonal is very gender neutral because you can, you know, change the weights. Again, it's powered by AI, which I really love. You know, when we have our workout programs, when you go through a workout program at Tonal, it's very specified to you. You know, if you want to do a heavier weight, you can do a heavier weight. If not, you don't have to. You can also utilize AI to do chains mode or a smart move mode where it'll know where you're weak, where you're not. So I think Tonal is very gender neutral. I think Sportsbox AI, going back to that, 3D data in the past have been very male orientated. I think like 90% of the data or so is from male figures. So when you actually have a female using the 3D data, it's completely different because the markers are in completely different places. The founder of Sportsbox 3D AI is a woman, and she's taking upon herself to really have 3D data be very half and half between men and women. So she's taken upon herself to really collect the data half and half between men and women. So I think that's really helped. Even from like the AI standpoint, AI gets their information from data collection, and that data collection needs to be fair. It can't just be orientated one way or another.
You mentioned Sportsbox AI, and I also saw that interview you gave with PitchBook and with the Sportsbox AI CEO. And I know you've sort of talked about wanting to highlight and put investment in female-led companies, as well as those that have a strong sort of stance, I guess, in diversity and sustainability. Can you talk me through, I guess, how sort of translating those principles into practice sort of happens? Is it a case of, are you looking for these companies and approaching them? How does that sort of work, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's also, again, case by case. There's no like umbrella thing that I do. You know, there are companies that I reached out. You know, Tonal, I reached out just because I think the product is genius. And I think it really can help democratize private training, you know, gym equipment inside your house. You know, we're also going through a time of COVID, and, you know, people were needing that, you know, in Blue Land. I reached out to them because I love their sustainability mission. I love that their founder is, you know, is Asian, and she's a woman, and she talks the talk and walks the walk. She's at our Capitol every chance she can to change legislation against plastic usage. And it's a company where I really believe from top to bottom that they believe in their mission and they won't cut costs to compromise, but they also bring, again, democratize non-plastic usage in the household cleaning space in a very affordable way to many households.
I guess we're seeing this sort of now, and this isn't really a question, it's more an observation, just sort of investments are being made but with purpose, I guess, compared to maybe a couple of years ago where people are sort of invested in something that maybe, you know, they sort of heard about it, or they're, you know, it wasn't quite as thought through, I guess. Is that something you're sort of seeing as well, that more investments, and I'm sure you can sort of cite your examples that, of investment, it feels like it's very purpose-driven and purpose-led rather than, I guess, it being a backseat marker.
Yeah, I mean, I think my portfolio has gotten a lot more diverse. You know, obviously, I feel very strongly and passionately about the companies that I believe in the mission, and that, yeah, is led with purpose. There also are investments that I just believe are good investments. And I think it's important to keep a diverse portfolio, but also to do things that you're passionate about and that you believe in.
I've watched your sort of series that you run, sort of the three episodes, talking to sort of fellow female athletes, and you often ask them, what kind of company do you wish you sort of invested in? I'm curious, well, with that question in mind, is there any that you sort of wish you sort of had a time machine to sort of turn back and sort of buy stock from or anything?
Oh, gosh. Tesla, probably.
Yeah.
Uber? I don't know. I mean, if you look back, there's so many, but probably Tesla.
Yeah, and that one has obviously taken off on its old trajectory since. But I know you're on a path of learning, but there are obviously athletes out there who are still sort of making their way, maybe even starting now, I guess, or even in the twilight of their career. Is there advice or lessons that you sort of have for those athletes who are looking to sort of get into the investment space?
Yeah, I mean, I would say start small, just jump in. That's really the only way that you really learn. Obviously, you can learn from a textbook and from reading news articles. I highly recommend doing that, but jumping in and a number that you're comfortable with, and just you find a company that you like, just do it and learn from that. It could be a complete mistake. It could be a complete bomb, but you know, you're going to learn from it. And the only really way to do it is to jump in. You know, I've recently started working with this investment firm called Patrick Hoff & Co., and they help a lot of athletes, you know, with their investments and to look over the portfolios and whatnot. And they've been very, very helpful. So finding firms like that as well with other like-minded athletes can be very helpful too.
Yeah, actually, that brings up, you're aligned with PitchBook. I've heard you describe them as your caddy when it comes to investment. I'm just curious, I guess, how does that relationship sort of work in terms of how do they support you in terms of making investments?
Yeah. You know, I'm really glad you brought that up. You know, they're extremely helpful. And I think that people who are learning to invest or wanting to invest should utilize PitchBook. You know, it's a very data-driven company. At the same time, it's very user-friendly data, which I love. And they really are like a caddy to my investments because, you know, when I look to do an investment, I email PitchBook and I'm like, hey, can I get some more information on this category or this company in specific? And, you know, bring up all the data, bring up all the history. And it just helps me to come up with a more well-educated decision. And I have a lot more confidence when I have data that is, you know, helping me make that decision versus just feel-based. You know, you have to have a combination of data versus feel.
I guess, like you said, it's a case-by-case basis, but is there any particular field or which that right now you're interested in when it comes to sort of looking for the right opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, I think my passion lies in consumer brands. I love consumer brands in general. So it's a category that I'm probably the most knowledgeable in. You know, I know there's a whole world of AI and technology and defense tech and all that stuff that I don't understand in. I would love to broaden my horizon and learn more about those. But I think my core probably is consumer brands just because I know it the most.
Sure. And I guess to wrap up, I'm just curious if you and I wanted to sort of have a conversation again a few years down the line, what would you like to sort of achieve with your career, your investment career, in terms of broadening it out and finding the opportunities? What would you like to sort of, I don't know, be proud of, I guess, you know, from achievements wise?
Yeah, I mean, I would love for, you know, my companies to make big exits. That would be amazing. I also would love, you know, the companies that, you know, I invested in to have a positive impact in the world and to really see the impact being formed. I see it day to day. That part is a lot of fun.
I know you obviously do punditry work with CBS, or you did a couple of years ago. We're looking back at it now. Are you sort of glad that you made the decision to turn into an investment, I guess, because there's so many opportunities out there for athletes to sort of finish their career?
Yeah, you know, I'm not closing any doors. That door definitely isn't closed, but it was just me realizing that, you know, going to the broadcast space, you know, meant I have to do more traveling. And that was a big reason why I, you know, retired from golf was the travel part of it. But, you know, I still enjoy it. I still love it. And definitely not closing that door.